Hello, and welcome to the Business Behind Small Business, the show that reminds you that just because you own a business doesn't mean you're a business owner. In each episode, we will discuss a common issue small businesses face and offer tips and advice from the perspectives of two business owners, one that built to sell and one that built to inherit. We are your hosts, Savannah Stone and Chloe Lee. There's a lot of business behind small business, so let's get to it. There are natural progressions with the evolution of the sale building cycle. You go to a networking event, you gather cards, and you send follow-up emails, and hopefully you've taken the time to listen to our previous podcasts that outline these steps. I'm certain you made a connection with someone who could be beneficial to you as you build your network. So let's get to that one-to-one and how to make it work for you. Before we begin, we should note our disclaimer. We are not licensed financial experts, nor do we give financial advice. Anything we share with you here on our podcast, whether it be a personal experience or submission or advice, tips that have worked for us or that we believe would work for you, should not be viewed as either financial, business, or tax advice. We ask for you to do your research, have open and honest conversations with your company's own support providers, and make decisions based upon that. Throughout this broadcast, we will share our knowledge and give suggestions and hope you will receive them as part of your overall research to better your own company. So, Chloe, tell us what you think are the benefits of a one-to-one, and do you think that a business can grow without doing these?
So, let's start with why do a one-to-one?
Yes.
We all know this. Relationships are built over time. And lasting relationships are built when you move beyond that first impression. So while you meet someone for the first time and you get a good vibe off of them, and you may equally give off a good vibe, one-to-ones are when you usually learn who they are and show your mutual commitment to getting to know each other. Because after all, when you agree to a one-to-one, you're agreeing to carving out time in your day. Time, which is a limited commodity, to spend with that person. Mm-hmm. One-on-ones at a minimum takes an hour. And that doesn't even include the travel time to and from each other's office or to the local coffee shop or lunch spot that you plan to meet at. Mm-hmm. So don't take one-on-ones lightly. It's a commitment of your limited resource and time and effort, and same for the person that you're meeting. So how can you benefit, or how can your business rather benefit from this? So I think most people, when they think of networking and benefiting from one-on-ones, they're really thinking about the short-term gains. Mm-hmm. They focus on the sale that may be right around the corner, either the potential sale that the person you're having one-on-one with will give you directly, or the customer that that person is going to introduce you to next. But as the CEO and founder of your business, I personally would recommend that you take a look at one-on-one from like a much wider angle. One-on-ones really should be done with people who can be like your next business partner, your next referral partner, or the person who can elevate your business or you to the next level. Remember, effective one-on-ones are large investments of time, because to truly build a relationship, you will need more than one one-to-one meeting, and likely it has to be done over several months. Because one, you don't want to hog up that person's time and become somewhat stalkerish, unless, of course, the relationship naturally lends itself to you both having the opportunity to meet up more often. So with that in mind, choose your one-on-one counterpart carefully and think about all the benefits of a long-term relationship and not just the next sale. So I was actually going to give some examples of one-on-ones, but I was thinking like, I don't have other people's examples. But I will say that, you know, I've been fortunate enough, because when I started doing one-on-ones, I didn't know to think about it strategically. Mm-hmm. Because I was a green business owner who didn't know what the heck I was doing. But luckily, the universe placed people in my path that I met at networking events, which I organically grew a relationship over time simply by knowing it's important to surround yourself with good people. So most of the times the relationships were built out of circumstance, and other times it was more intentional, right? Like a schedule to meet up maybe once a quarter or a couple times a year. I would say that those relationship, I've met referral partners who were absolute rainmakers at the start of the business, providing me with like the biggest accounts I probably had to date. I've met like-minded entrepreneurs like you, Savannah. Right. who have very similar like business values and ambitions that kind of inspire me to do better in my business and gladly serve as a sounding board for them and vice versa when things
Oh yeah.
I've met like-minded like entrepreneurs who are where I want to be. And you know, they become kind of informal mentors, which I know, Savannah, you're big on too, especially with kind of your board of advisors. And more specifically, I even met the CEO of the company that ended up acquiring my last business over a one-to-one. So that's a successful one, not to mention, you know, a certain co-host of this podcast over the year.
Yeah, me.
And certainly also the future business partner of my next company. I mean, one-to-ones can go a long way.
Yeah, and it's funny because you know, you used to send a lot of business in my direction. And I always felt like because you would get clients that just did not fit your company, but they fit mine. But very few times did that ever, could I ever reciprocate in that manner for you. But I felt terrible about that because I was like, I can't even send her any business. But what I did feel like I could offer was being a sounding board for you. And that's the thing I think that people should be aware of is that it's not always about building a business relationship in the sense that this person can either become a client or this person can send me clients. Sometimes it is an emotional connection in that they might understand what you're going through. Maybe they're a good sounding board for you. If you guys are in the same industry, maybe you could reach out to them to say, hey, I've got this idea. What do you think? And you know that the conversation that you're going to have is not going to be a proprietary one. I don't know how to explain it. Like there's no competition between you two. You can ask those kinds of questions, even if you are in the same industry, but only that person, or rather only somebody in that industry could be answering this question for you. And I know that I've come to you quite often to say, I'm thinking about doing this. I'm thinking about doing that. And you and I were in the same industry. And I knew that you would give me your answer honestly or vice versa. So it's important to know that this one-to-one, it kind of branches into various types of relationships, not just is this person going to become a client or is this person going to send me clients?
Yeah, I think oftentimes people focus too much on that revenue generation. Even when people get to one-on-ones, I feel like the ones that kind of fizzle out a lot of times are the ones that come to the table and both sides are thinking, well, how much revenue can we generate?
Right.
And this is not how it works. That is not, and certainly maybe over time, there are some revenue generating opportunities. But I find that when you come to the table and that is all you think about, the relationship fizzles out before you can even get started.
Oh, for sure. I have some, if you don't mind, I'll go into my advice.
Absolutely.
Well, I always found that it's a good idea to master small talk and the art of making someone feel special. It's really the foundation of where you're going to go from there. So use this time to truly get to know the person outside of who they are in the business world. You got to make sure you come prepared. Perhaps check out their LinkedIn profile before your meeting to find things to talk about. Check out their website. And if they'll either realize that you did your homework, or you can tell them, oh, I checked out your website. I thought it was really cool, or, you know, whatever. This is going to make them feel like you're serious about creating a relationship. And then also make sure to bring something to write with and on to take notes. Now ask them about their personal life. And I think that it's okay in this situation because you're getting to know each other, right? Like usually, generally, you don't want to mix business with personal, but you could ask them if they have any kids, have any hobbies, do they live nearby? Whatever it is you can find in their answer that aligns with what you have in your life. Commonality is important to building trust. And if you have something in common, it gives a person a sense that you're both in this together. And it's something that you can build on in the conversation.
The one thing I would say about that is that when you're a CEO and you're the founder of your business, guess what? Business is personal and personal is business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's no linear divide between those two. So mm-hmm. getting to know each other, who they are personally outside of being a business owner, that's a sure way to really connect over a one-on-one.
Absolutely. And I also feel like it's if you feel hesitant in the conference, or maybe the person is not feeling comfortable. Not everybody is just, you know, glowingly well with small talk. Some people are, you know, a little bit intimidated. They're a little timid. It's a good way to kind of break the ice. Take the time to ask the person what inspired them to be in this field or to start their business. If you don't really want to get into the personal side of it, everyone has a story, and you'll find that person comes alive when you ask them about, you know, their other baby, their business. It shows you truly care about their story, and it will make them feel special. Adversely, they may ask you about your backstory too, and this gives you the chance to give your brand the story it deserves. I don't know how familiar you are with story branding, but story branding, and our listeners as well, story branding isn't just for marketing purposes. It's good for working your way through the networking world and giving people something to hang on to. There's a story behind your brand, and there's a journey that you've taken up to this point, and it's kind of cool to share it with people, even if you only share, you know, 5% of it.
Well, so it's funny that you actually say that. As soon as you said the word story brand, my mind immediately jumped to that book called Building a Story Brand.
Yeah.
You ever heard of that before by Donald? Oh, it's a great book. So if for our listeners who aren't really quite familiar with the concept of what you were just saying, Donald Miller wrote this book called Building a Story Brand that really helps you kind of craft craft the ability for you to tell your story in a way. Mm-hmm. It's not from a business perspective too, but, you know, similar to what you're saying, personal and business kind of all mixed together when it becomes small business. But this book will really kind of help you through how to actually craft a story for yourself.
Yeah, not everybody knows how to, and it's a good idea to read that book or to do some research on story branding if you don't know how to articulate the story behind your brand. It's important. It's not necessarily important to the one-to-one, but it's important just generally speaking.
Well, you want it to be engaging too, right? You don't want to go on a 30-minute diatribe about like your backstory, where you grew up, all this stuff. It's like you kind of have to figure out how to get to a point kind of concisely and still convey what your story and what your brand is.
Yeah. In the end, you want to keep this concise. If this person is someone you're hoping to land as a client, you know, because not all one-to-ones are about building relationships. Some of them are because this person was interested in your company or your services, your products. You could ask questions that start with, how do your customers react to, or how do you propose to, or what is one thing you would improve to, or what makes you choose X? You may want to practice asking questions that are open-ended and elicit more questions, not just yes and no. It's funny, I learned about this method years ago when I worked in direct sales. It wasn't like I was a door-to-door salesperson, but I worked in direct sales, and one of the very first things they taught us was about asking questions that elicits another question or is thoughtful, makes a person think. It's not just a yes and no. Not only is that going to force the conversation to start and stop and start and stop, it's not going to get you anywhere, and your one-to-one will fizzle. I've been there. So awkward.
When you realize like the chemistry definitely broke.
Yes. It's like, how quickly can I finish? I really shouldn't have gotten a large coffee. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, it's better to get it done than to get it right. So don't fret if either of you seem awkward in the beginning. It's always difficult to have a meaningful conversation with someone you've spoken to for 10 minutes. Break the ice and you'll start to feel natural soon enough. Make sure to schedule your next one-to-one in a month or so that they know and feel you are invested in them. Usually before we leave, I'll be like, you know, I had such a great time talking to you. Would you be all right with scheduling another one-to-one in, say, a month or so? That way it's long enough that they don't feel like I just saw you. and it's not so long that they're like, wait, who are you again? So this also gives time for both of your businesses to have evolved a little bit more so that the next time you guys see each other, there's even more to talk about. Again, if this person is a prospect you met at a networking event and you feel as though this person may engage, you can take the chance and ask questions about budget. Who are the decision makers? How are decisions made? If these questions don't feel right now, that's okay. Just keep them in your back pocket, maybe for that next time that you two meet. If it's not feeling right then maybe it's the following time that you meet. Whenever it is, just keep them in your back pocket. If this meeting is for a referral candidate, partner potential, you should position the questions a little differently. Ask them if they already have a relationship with someone in your field. And if they do, offer insight on how a relationship with you could be different. Remember, this is still the art of the sale, and referral partners act as our gatekeepers or wingman to landing a client. This potential referral partner needs to know that you could be a good wingman for them. So I have a side note. Some of the best referral partnerships I have are with others in the same field as I am, like you. The reason why we are in competition is because we're all slightly different from one another. Whereas one partner doesn't work with nonprofits, for example, I do, which makes us a good fit, or, you know, whatever those little delineations may be. Know that during this meeting, it's not really all about you. I know you want to talk about yourself. You want to do all that you can to sell yourself, but really it's not all about you. This person didn't choose to have a coffee with you because of your sparkling personality, although I'm sure that helped. They want your help as well. So get that pen and notebook out. Ask them who they want to be connected to. Do you know anyone that wants an introduction to them, or anyone that they might want an introduction to? I'm sure you do, especially if you've been following our advice on networking. If so, go ahead and offer to them an emailed introduction. Of course, before you introduce them, make sure you check with the person first to see if they would like that introduction. By showing them you're there to help them, they will be that much more motivated to help you. Also, keep in mind, although it's always nice to have a one-to-one with someone, especially for the first time, this is not an invitation to spend the whole day with them. It's not. You know what? Before I can continue, what's the longest one you've ever had?
Oh, my gosh. Oh.
I have to say I'm going to win this one, but go on.
Oh, I'm sure you will. So I can guard my time like crazy. Always have. So I think the longest something went on for that was like – not that it couldn't have gone on, but, you know, you feel that stretch where you're like, I feel like we kind of overstayed our welcome for each other right now. Like, how do we, you know, part ways? Probably like 90 minutes to like maybe 2 hours, which is like 30 to 45 minutes too long than it should be. But you were like, I don't know how to get out of this conversation at this point, because not every one-to-one is amazing, right? Uh-huh. Every once in a while you will meet a dud where you really hit it off in a networking event, or they were introduced by somebody else and, you know, by obligation, you wanted to be polite, so you didn't want to say no. Anyways, you got, you know, you're in this meeting now and you can't get out of it. Hi, guys, I can see you giggling. How long is yours?
3.5 hours.
Hey, how many cups of coffee did you have to buy at that point?
I was brand new. Oh, and actually, yeah. It was someone that I met at the very first networking event I had ever been to. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that that's how these things go. Like and this woman, God bless her, she was just such a sweet woman. But man, could she talk. Talk. I don't remember doing a whole lot of talking.
I think those are the meetings where you're kind of like, how do I get out of this? Because you realize that you can't really get a word in edgewise. I've done that. I'm sure actually most of these were in the very beginning when I didn't know how to strategically think my way through a one-to-one. So I ended up just spending more time than I should. But at the same time, at the start of your business, you probably had a little more time to spend than you did later on. Not saying that you should.
Yeah, but it's still time wasted.
Yeah, it's still, that's what I'm saying. It's still time wasted. So, but that's why I also say, you know, you got to choose your person carefully. You can't say yes to one-on-one to everyone. Person. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? Use your common sense. You can tell when a person is asking for a one-to-one, which unfortunately as a woman, sometimes guys... You guys are great, but sometimes men will want a one-to-one because they want to get to know you. How can I say this? because they want to get to know you on more than just a business scale.
Let's just leave it at that.
And then sometimes a woman, when you're a woman and you meet another woman, sometimes you can tell that maybe she's just wanting to talk. You can tell when you meet. That I did not realize that at the time when I first started. But you can sometimes tell when this person is serious and when they're looking for something other than just talking about business. They're looking for a personal relationship, or they're just bored and they're looking for somebody to talk to.
It goes back to, like we said in the beginning, is to select your networking events carefully. Kind of prevent those kind of meetings that may not be ideal. Being on the other side and having been green myself and probably being that person on a first one-to-one and showing up and not being fully prepared or always talking about yourself and your business, thinking that you have to be on. Like, even at this point, like I don't mind taking one-on-ones with new business owners or entrepreneurs, but I don't really appreciate taking that one-to-one and being sold to.
Yeah. No, I agree. No matter how hard I have tried, there has been a couple of times when I thought this person was serious. And then when I met with them, all they did was talk about how great they are at their job. And I'm like, geez, oh, peace. Do you know my name? Did we even get to that part yet? You know, like, I don't know. Anyway, so this speaks volumes to the point that I was going to make, is to make sure to have a hard stop at no more than an hour. Let them know you have somewhere else to be at the jump. Like, you guys are meet up. Let's say you met at a coffee shop. Hey, it's so great to see you. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for meeting up with me. Just a heads up, I have a meeting in an hour and a half or something like that. If you're meeting face to face, I have a meeting in an hour and a half. So I want to make the best use out of this time and I don't want to waste yours. So if you say that, then that kind of sets the precedence of what they should expect. You're not going to spend the whole day with them and go shopping or whatever. Anyway, the more referrals you send to this person, the more likely they will be to send referrals to you. And in the end, that's what a successful one-to-one produces. This is why we go to networking events and why we choose to further the conversation. By building that network, you've expanded your potential and hopefully earned yourself the perfect referral partner. And even though I say that, you know, the whole, this a successful one-to-one produces business, a successful one-to-one also produces opportunities for your business to grow in the ways that I had mentioned earlier. Like, maybe they can be a sounding board for you. Maybe they can introduce you to platforms, apps, or whatever that can help your business grow. You know, opinions. They can share their opinions with you. You can even just talk shop with somebody and that truly understands where you're coming from. That's what a successful one-to-one is. Just remember that networking isn't about the close of a sale. It's about fostering relationships. These one-to-ones aren't one and dones. Can I brand that?
So clever.
I love it. They are the first step in a very long conversation. You're building your network, which means you should plan another meeting. That's what I'm talking about. Before you walk away, plan another meeting a couple of months down the road before you both depart. This is going to ensure you always stay on top of mind for them.
See, I like what you said, which is kind of use your common sense. We all have these instincts. We know if you're hitting it off with somebody or not. Mm-hmm. Some people you just don't have chemistry with. It just is, right? And after a one-to-one, you know that. And don't force it. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean by organic. Like, do not force this, because you're committing not only your time, but you're also committing their time. And
yeah,
it's hard to pinpoint like kind of how to do this properly, except to say that, you know, just use your judgment. Mm-hmm. Use your logic, use your common sense. Don't become overbearing to somebody. Yeah. Just go with it. Go with how it flows.
Well, and also I feel like if you go to a networking event, let's say it's not a networking event where it's like a happy hour kind of thing. Let's say you go to one of these networking organizations where you stand up, you give your 30-second spiel and whatnot. I found very quickly that those that took 2 to 3 minutes to tell you what their business was about was definitely not the person I wanted to do a one-to-one with. I don't care if they could have been a great fit for me. They're not a good fit for me right now. They got to figure themselves out and how to bring that 2 minute to a 30 second.
That's right.
Because, and I'm not saying this in as a fault to their personality. It's the level of green they are, because those people who can articulate what their businesses do in 30 seconds means that they've been doing this for a while. They know how this is done. They know what they're doing. They know how to get the job done. Those are the more seasoned professionals that you want to be meeting with, as opposed to someone who's like, well, my business works with everybody and we do everything for everyone. Oh my God. You know, I've only been 3.5 hours.
Yeah. And I think that again goes back to the networking event and what kind of networking event you attend. Yeah. So there are reasons why certain networking events and networking groups require fees. It's really to weed out those who are starting up. Not that there is anything wrong with a new business owner wanting to meet somebody more seasoned. But again, like you said, like we all went through those phases. We all had to graduate from those phases, and we've kind of earned our, I don't know if right is the right word, but we certainly earned our place to having one-to-ones with somebody that is of the same kind of experience as we are at. So just be a little careful if you were that green, because again, you know, you and I were on the other, we were definitely green at one point, and I'm sure you've sat in meetings where clearly you're with somebody who is far more experienced than you are in business, and they're probably walking away feeling like they kind of wasted time a little bit with you. I certainly have, because when I started, I didn't know. Nobody told me what I'm supposed to do at a one-on-one. Nobody told me how to think about it, how to approach it, how to prepare for one. And so, you know, I guess heed our advice and don't do what we did.
Totally. Oh my God. So, I will give my final opinion, I guess, on this, is that when I would meet someone that was not necessarily in the same industry as me, because I'm not telling you guys to, you know, focus on your industry. There have been times when I have met with people that are in a place in their business in which I would like to be in. Those persons, I've told them from the beginning, you know, when I first met them, I am so in awe of how you have built this business. And I know that your time is very limited, but would you mind taking an hour out of your day and meeting up with me for a coffee? I'll buy. I just want to pick your brain a little bit.
Yeah.
I did those a few times.
I have too, right? And I still do that now, because certainly I haven't reached the pinnacle of business that I want to create yet. So there are plenty of great examples out there of people who are doing what I want to do one day when I grow up and are where I want to be. But that's a great approach. I mean, I've done the same thing where, you know, I said the same thing like, hey, I'll buy if you don't mind. I just really would love just a few minutes of your time. And I came prepared with questions. Mm-hmm. I came prepared thinking ahead of what am I going to say? What am I going to ask to make sure that I'm not wasting so-and-so's time? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough too, and I'm sure you have too, Savannah, to be on the other side of that table where we're the ones that somebody wanted to speak to get their, you know, to pick the minds up. Which is an absolute privilege. And I feel that every single time too. The thing is, not every entrepreneur, but for the most part, if you're building something out of scratch, you are more than happy to lend your time to, you know, help somebody else build their business from scratch. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you know, I know that we always say, hey, your time's limited. And I know that we're, you know, kind of just taking, like, inconveniencing you, but being on the other side of the table, I can say for sure, like, I don't ever feel inconvenience unless the person shows up with nothing to say and just waiting for me to say stuff.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Right? But it is that is the magic of a one-to-one, or how it could be.
Yep, I agree. In each episode, we like to connect a famous example to our discussion to help you relate our talking points on a more global or well-recognized scale. Sometimes we use exact examples of either famous persons or successful business owners of today or in history, and sometimes we use examples of people who've inspired us and have inspired today's discussion.
So my example came from something that I am reading now, or I just actually finished recently. So my example is to show how relationships grow over time and the benefits that may be realized a little bit further downstream, but how every one-to-one is an opportunity to be able to realize those benefits. Mm-hmm. So you may have heard of Matthew McConaughey.
Of course.
I just finished reading his memoir, Green Lights. So this is kind of my mind.
Awesome. I've been wanting to read that. Okay.
It is really good. It's really good. It's so good that you almost feel like, you know, in my head, the voice in my head as I'm reading is his voice.
Yeah.
But he also narrates his audiobooks. If you really want to hear his voice, that's one
way. Oh, yeah.
Cool. So anyways, for those who have never heard of Matthew McConaughey, he is a widely known actor. He started in the small yet memorable role of Dazed and Confused. Mm-hmm. And then he also had big box office hits like A Time to Kill, Wedding Planner, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, Contact, Dallas Buyers Club, yada, yada, yada. Right. Mm-hmm. So he started his first start on a big screen was Dazed and Confused, but his real fame didn't come until his role on A Time to Kill as Jake Briggs, the lawyer and the lead role of the movie. So my example is how he came about this role. So he was actually in a one-on-one meeting with Joel Schumacher, who is the director of the film. And they were meeting to discuss the role of Freddie Lee Cobb, who was actually the young head of the Ku Klux Klan in a small Mississippi town. So for anybody who doesn't know about A Time to Kill, it's actually a book that was written by John Grisham and Wikipedia, so you can see what the plot is.
It's a great movie.
So while this role of Freddie Lee Cobb was intriguing, Matthew McConaughey was actually more interested in the lead role of the lawyer who was defending a black man for killing the men who raped his daughter. So during this one-on-one, Matthew McConaughey suggested that he played the lead role, in which the director, Joel, immediately laughed and said, "That's a great idea, but it will never happen because the studio will never put a relatively unknown actor in a lead role." Mm-hmm. And then they left it at that. Matthew McConaughey actually went in that meeting specifically with the idea of planting the seed in the director's mind. But ultimately, it actually took a series of events to happen that was completely out of his control before that seed actually grew into something.
Mm-hmm.
So the series of events that had to happen was that around that same time, Sandra Bullock, who was actually casted as the other lead in the movie, had released her film While You Were Sleeping, which became a huge hit and made her one of the most bankable stars in Hollywood, which means the studio felt that she alone can actually headline a film. Then John Grisham, who was the author of the book A Time to Kill, had actual casting approvals for the film, and he actually ended up turning down having Woody Harrelson play the role of the lawyer, which actually made room for Matthew McConaughey. Isn't that crazy? Like, you think about it now, you're like, it's one of those things where you hear about, like, some lead role would have gone to somebody else, and you're like, I can't imagine how, I mean, he would have been great, because he's a great actor, but you just can't imagine that film without Matthew McConaughey now.
Oh, for sure. And side note, Woody Harrelson has the most fascinating background. Ever get a chance, Google him. So,
All right, for the next podcast.
Yeah.
So 6 to 8 weeks, there's about 6 to 8 weeks before the film is about to be shot, and everybody was casted except for the role of the lawyer. And so finally, Matthew McConaughey got the call he was waiting for. And just to give you an aspect of time, it's been about 2 months since he actually met with the director for the first time and planted that seed. And finally, the director called him for a screen test to come in and audition for the role. So while he wasn't guaranteed for the role, this was his opportunity. And of course, we all know he obviously did well in the audition. He was cast in the role that basically launched his whole career.
Wow. Mine's not that cool. I'm using co-branding campaigns as my example. One of my favorites is the relationship between BMW and Louis Vuitton. Like, it seems like it's been like that forever, but it hasn't. And I got this information from revup-rev.com. Car manufacturer BMW and designer Louis Vuitton may not be the most obvious of pairings, but if you think about it, they have a few important things in common. If you focus on Louis Vuitton's signature luggage lines, they're both in the business of travel. They both value luxury. And finally, they're both well-known traditional brands that are known for high-quality craftsmanship. These shared values are exactly why this co-branding campaign made so much sense. In their partnership, BMW created a sports car model called the BMW i8, while Louis Vuitton designed an exclusive four-piece set of suitcases and bags that fit perfectly into the car's rear parcel shelf. Although the four-piece luggage set goes for a whopping $20,000, the price isn't right for the target customer. I can't afford the tax on that. As the BMW i8 starts at $135,700. You know, you can buy a plane ticket for a lot less. Anyway, a price like that kind of
plane tickets, I imagine.
A few, yes. First class. A price like that kind of makes that luggage set seem like a drop in the bucket. Not only does the luggage fit perfectly size-wise, but its design and appearance fit perfectly with BMW's image. Sleek, masculine, high quality. Turns out both the luggage and some parts of the car's interior use carbon fiber, strong yet light composite material. This collaboration with BMW epitomized the shared values of creativity, technological innovation, and style, said Patrick Louis Vuitton, head of special orders at Louis Vuitton. Our craftsmen have enjoyed the challenge of this very special project, using their ingenuity and attention to detail to create a truly made-to-measure set of luxury luggage. This is a pure expression of the art of travel. The reason why I used co-branding campaign is because I felt like it was, well, maybe this is a really big, well, it is our famous example. Anyway, a really great example of what a referral relationship could look like.
Well, I would say they did pretty well with themselves.
They did. I do have one more example that I think also speaks really well to what a referral relationship looks like on a large scale. Target plus literally any up-and-coming designer or product influencer. If you haven't been paying attention, please do, because Target, whoever is in charge of this, is flipping genius about this. I don't even know where to begin or to end on this one. I'm certain you know what I'm talking about here. The way that they help brands on a global scale, and then those brands in turn tout the beauty of Target as a brand. There's this cross-marketing that happens between the two, and all they get out of it is that they're in a relationship with one another. It's the most wonderful example of what a referral relationship looks like on a super grand scale. Granted, yours might not be like that, but I will say that I do have quite a few relationships where the relationship partner will send someone to me. I will do the work of whatever it is that client needs, and then in turn send them back to that person. And then maybe I tend to have this kind of relationship with people who are in financial/business relationships, say a CPA or someone else who has financial consultant tack to them. It's great because I get, I make a great client and I get paid for something wonderful. And then I in turn send them to that person and then they make money off of it. It's a win-win. With each episode, we like to share either books, tools, apps, platforms, or anything we think is a great next step and connector to our discussion. So if you like our subject matter and want to learn more, you'll have a great place to start.
So I actually didn't have any books to recommend myself. Naturally, I would say that for you to get good at a one-on-one is practice. Prepare before you get out there and just practice your one-on-ones.
Yes.
But I will say that I came across this Forbes article that recommended 7 books on relationships while I was researching for this episode. And the recommendations really grabbed me. And they're certainly on my reading list now. So I kind of wanted to share with everybody here. We'll put the link in the article itself in the show notes. And then, credit to Rhett Power of Forbes, who authored this list of recommendations. So the first book he recommended was Winning Words, Winning Life, Fast Track to Life Success. Good thing is most of these titles speak for themselves, so I'm not going to go into exactly what the books are about, but you can certainly look them up, right? So number 2, The Non-Obvious Guide to Emotional Intelligence. Mm-hmm. We all need a little of that when we are in a one-on-one.
For sure.
3, Meaningful Alignment, Mastering Emotionally Intelligent Interactions at Work and in Life. That title definitely speaks for itself. Number 4, A Tribe Called Bliss. Breakthrough superficial friendships, create real connections, and reach your highest potential.
Oh, that sounds like something you could use in your regular life as well.
Well, the interesting thing is that this book actually was mainly geared toward women, because women, they say that women are tend to be less afraid to say, to say they want deeper, more meaningful relationships. So I guess,
Yeah, no, I get it.
Yeah. You just want to go beyond, you know, of course, a one-on-one, the whole idea is you want to go beyond that surface level, you know, initial meeting that you had. Number five, the friendship formula, how to say goodbye to loneliness and discover deeper connection.
Mm-hmm.
Number six, connected strategy, building continuous customer relationships for competitive advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And then last, number seven, the mindfulness toolbox for relationships. 50 practical tips, tools, and handouts for building compassionate connections. I don't know what Rhett was doing, but he built an amazing list of recommendations. We'll be busy reading those for the next 6 months.
Gosh. That's awesome. It sounds like what the common theme is with all of those, and also with the ones that I have, is sharing a part of yourself that, or it's necessary for you to share a part of yourself and to have the expectation of that other person to share a part of themselves that is under that surface level, not so deep that you guys are having these super deep connections. You can't have that in the first month, but it's got to go beyond that superficial surface, because you cannot connect with a person if you don't go beyond that. So you have to be comfortable with sharing a more authentic part of yourself and have the expectation of them to share an authentic part of themselves too. And if you find that the conversation, like I have had with, there was one one-to-one I did that, golly, all he did was talk about how great he is at what he did. As I mentioned, all he did was talk about that. And I'm like, we're not getting anywhere. We're not going to get anywhere.
It's a fine balance, right? Like to be able to balance a conversation, a business conversation, so that you don't go too casual, because heavens, right. It's not two friends grabbing beer at the bar.
Right.
You want to know how to make that connection without it being too casual, because there's definitely a difference between a friendship and a business relationship.
Yes, agreed. So I found a few books that I thought were right on the money of what we're talking about, and I bet they'd go deeper into what these networking relationships are really all about. Firstly, Stop Networking, Relationship Building, Meeting New People, and Connecting with Authenticity by Mike Fishbein. I apologize if I messed up the last name. He goes into mindsets, intercommunicative relationships, and strategies. You'll learn how to become the ultimate connector. Mike Fishbein has written several books on entrepreneurship, networking, business relationships, and more. I bet if you looked him up, it's Fish, B-E-I-N. You'd find quite a few books. And you take your pick. Next, I recommend Success is in Your Sphere. Leverage the power of relationships to achieve your business goals by Zvi Band.
Wait for that. I was like, I don't know how to pronounce it. That starts with Z followed by V as a nickname.
Man, I am not winning today. This book will also deep dive into proven approaches to leveraging the unique power of relationships. I apologize, Zvi, if I am saying your name wrong, but I do want our listeners to know that you've been named a Washingtonian Tech Titan 4 times, and he was a finalist for Ernst & Young's 2016 Entrepreneur of the Year Award. He was recognized among T360's Swanepoel Power 200 Most Influential Leaders and Real Trends Game Changers.
He sounds kind of cool.
Yeah. Right? So it's Zvi, Z-V-I, Band, B-A-N-D. I think all of your recommendations and the two that I recommended, between those, you should be able to find something that you can wrap your mind around and start doing these one-to-ones in a way that they can benefit you in whatever way it is you're looking for them to benefit you. Please join us for our final episode in this series, where we will discuss part 4 of our 4-part series, It Takes a Village, Converting One-to-Ones to Lasting Partnerships or Clients. So essentially what we're going to talk about is, okay, you did that one-to-one, you did all of the things that we've told you to do, but how do you make these lasting partnerships, or how do you create lasting clients from them? Want to ask a question, leave a comment, or become a sponsor for a future episode of The Business Behind Small Business? Click on the link in the show notes and fill out the form. Until next time, thanks. Bye.